Please turn your Bibles to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, and we read from verse 9 to the end of the chapter. That is the passage of scripture we will be reflecting on this evening. Daniel 1 from verse 9 through to 21. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. We continue this evening in our study of the book of Daniel. Last week we began to look at his stand in the midst of the pressures of a pagan world. His and his friends' stand in the midst of the pressures of a pagan world. Pagan Babylon was a world that called these young men who had been forcibly removed from Jerusalem into captivity in Babylon to compromise and to yield to the pressures of living in such a place. The pressure of change and the pressure of indoctrination, the pressure of persecution and the pressure of discouragement. We saw last week that Daniel and his friends stood firm in their resolve to resist the pressure of change as well as the pressure of indoctrination. We saw that Daniel in particular resolved not to become a pagan Babylonian. He purposed in his heart to say no to this pressure. This meant, among other things, defying the king's appointments, even in regard to the food that was prescribed at the palace. In doing this, he showed himself to be a man of rare courage, admirable principle, a willingness to stand, even if it meant losing his life. We also saw that he combined decisiveness with courtesy, and that he had an expectation that God would work on his behalf. This evening, we want to go on to consider the standing he earned along with his friends, even while living in a pagan society. The standing he earned along with his friends, even while living in a pagan society. And we will consider three things in regard to that. Notice with me, first of all, that he won the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. He won the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. We read that in verse 9. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs was one of the executives who served under the emperor, Nebuchadnezzar. He was an advisor, he was an administrator, he was something like a chief of staff. And the Bible says Daniel won the favor and goodwill of this man. In reality, it is God who brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuch. Someone with influence at the emperor's court. Now, if God is the one who in fact was behind this, we will have to observe, first of all, that God, in a manner that he has not revealed, moved the chief of the eunuch to favor Daniel and to do good to Daniel. It wasn't the first time God would have been doing a thing like this. When he seeks to bless his people, he will sometimes move the most unlikely of people to do them good, to favor them. In Exodus chapter 1 and verse 17, for example, you will remember that Pharaoh was intent on destroying Israelite baby boys. And he gave instructions to midwives who happened to be Hebrews to kill every baby boy that was born in his realm and only spare the lives of the girls. But those midwives were moved by God, once again, in a manner that has not been revealed. God had influence upon those midwives. And rather than heed the command of Pharaoh, they chose to spare the lives of the Israelite babies. Well, this is what was happening here. God was at work in the life of the eunuch and moved him and influenced him to treat Daniel and his friends favorably. Daniel had demonstrated faithfulness to God, and now he receives unexpected help from the man who supervised their welfare. But let's notice, secondly, that the favor and goodwill toward Daniel came in two forms. First, It came in the form of a willingness on the part of the eunuch and the steward who was under him to go even against the king's command for the sake of not violating Daniel and his friends' conscience. You will notice in verse 10 that the chief of the eunuchs mentioned to Daniel that he feared his lord the king. That is to say, he feared Nebuchadnezzar, who had appointed the food and the drink that they were all meant to eat. He feared him. And he didn't want to endanger his own head before the king. So he was quite understandably afraid of the king, afraid of going against the clear command of the king. But then, if you go on reading, you find that the steward who served under the eunuch made an arrangement with Daniel and his friends that they would be put through a test. They will only be served vegetarian food. And after 10 days, they can be compared with the other young men who would not have been eating that same food. And then they will see who would have done well. The stewards allowed Daniel and his friends to undertake that test. The steward went against the clear command of the king. The steward, no doubt, under the supervision of the eunuch, willingly went against the king's command for the sake of not violating Daniel and his friends' consciences. Secondly, this favor took the form of a willingness to trust them. A willingness to trust them. You find in verse 16, they had undertaken the test and they had passed the test. For 10 days, they had that vegetarian food and not the king's food. And they turned out better and fatter, according to verse 15. The result of that, according to verse 16, was that the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. The steward trusted them, and they could live on a diet of their own choice from then onwards. Now, it's not that the Babylonians had been converted to Daniel's God. We are not told anything of the kind. The eunuch possibly remained worshipping his own gods, and so did the stewards under him. There is no indication that they had been converted to Daniel's God. But Daniel had won their respect. And Daniel had won their trust to a point where they were willing to leave them to the freedom of their consciences, knowing that even if they may not have agreed with them or worshipped their God, even if they had not shared in their religion, they trusted them to do the right thing. To do the right thing for themselves and to do the right thing for the state they served. I wonder whether you have such a standing before your bosses, wherever you work, before your supervisors, wherever you serve. Do you have a standing that has won their respect, their trusts? And for that reason, they favor you. They have goodwill toward you. They may not be Christians. They may not care about God. Or if they do, at least they don't care about your God. Their lifestyles maybe put you off. But you have conducted yourself before their eyes in such a way that you have won their respect and their trust. And so they are willing to be good to you. They are willing to favor you. They are willing to support you. Or are you the reason for the scorn, if any, that is poured upon the name of God? Because you conduct yourself in your workplace in a manner that cannot be respected by any reasonable person, by any self-respecting person. They don't respect you, and they have no regard for your God, and they pour scorn upon it. Well, Daniel and his friends had conducted themselves in such a way that they were respected and trusted and therefore favored. There is a second thing we must observe about Daniel's standing in a pagan society. He excelled both in worldly skill and spiritual skill. Note that in verse 17, as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, in reality, it is God who gave them these skills. That is how verse 17 puts it. As for these young men, God gave them knowledge and skills. To Daniel, he also gave the ability to understand visions and dreams. Michael Eaton, the former pastor of this church, in his commentary on Daniel, says this is one of the secrets of survival in pagan days. To have worldly skill on the one hand and spiritual skill on the other. Let's talk about worldly skill to start with. God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. Now, we've already read about that knowledge and that skill. It is the knowledge of the Babylonians. It's the literature of the Babylonians. It is books. It is learning that would give them knowledge of Babylonian culture, Babylonian politics, Babylonian art, Babylonian poetry, everything about the culture of the Babylonians. They were intended to know. And God encouraged that and inspired that. He gave them ability to give themselves to the acquisition of that knowledge. They were therefore very highly educated persons. They were as well informed in the scholarship of the day as any Babylonians. Very similar to Moses, existing there in the land of Egypt. We are told concerning him in Acts 7 and verse 22 that he was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Could be said about Daniel and his three friends that they were educated in all the knowledge of the Babylonians. Now, education is not everything. There are many educated people who appear to be bypassed by revivals. The uneducated catch something of that God influence and become effective. And the educated know nothing of that. And yet, it is true, isn't it? That when God is using someone to advance his kingdom, he gives them the education they need to do it. Look at all the great movements of the world and the men who were behind them. Greece was once well known for being ahead of the others in cultural development, in philosophical thinking. They did influence the development of Western civilization to some extent. If we had the time, we could argue that the thing that really pushed Western civilization was the coming of Christianity and not so much Greek civilization. But Greek civilization did have some influence. And I'm raising this point because you have to look at the people who were behind that push. They were all learned men. Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, others before them. We're all learned men. They were all thinkers. And they contributed to that development. If you come to the medieval era, you may even want to include the church in the medieval era. There were powerful, well-educated men who led movements for development. In the context of the church, you can mention the great Augustine, Saint Augustine, and others of his like. Further on in the medieval era, you can think about men like Thomas Aquinas. If you come to the Reformation, Martin Luther, John Calvin, Ulrich Zwingli, they were all very learned men. And they were not just learned in theology. They were learned in the knowledge and skills of the world. They led Reformation. They led great movements. They brought about change through their opinions. Daniel was destined to serve as a statesman, a skilled, respected government leader located in the emperor's court. More precisely, he was called to witness to the truth. And it's important for us to look at this in this way. He was called to be a witness to the truth as a statesman at a heathen court. At a time when the religion of Babylon was in the ascendancy, when the people of God were engulfed in the exile, to lead in a time such as that, as a government official, as a politician, whatever other work he did, he needed to be well educated. He had the equivalent of a degree, possibly a higher degree, in the literature and wisdom of the Babylonians. He understood what Babylon was about. He understood how government works. He understood the ways of the lives of the people. He understood the opinions that influenced that society. He was well placed to serve. When we serve in whatever place or office in the world, in our country, we must seek to be well educated in our fields to gain the respect of the world and to be effective and to be influential with them. This is important. It won't do for us to be trying to be influential, but the same world we are seeking to influence look down on us, have no respect for our knowledge or skills. We cannot have any influence with them when that is the situation. Daniel and his friends had influence. They excelled in worldly skill. But not only that, they also excelled in spiritual skill. You will note in verse 17, as for these young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And for Daniel, there is this additional information. He had understanding in all visions and dreams. He had worldly skill. But Daniel's skill was not simply a matter of education. God gave him spiritual gifts in addition to his worldly skills. Visions and dreams were from God, usually given to spiritual men. Oh, these days you find all kinds of cowboys claiming to be prophets and claiming to be receiving visions and calling men to hear them because they have an authoritative word. But they are not holy men. They are not godly men. They don't walk with God. Some are very scandalous men, but somehow they have some standing in some community, and they are said to be prophets. God often spoke to spiritual men, such as Daniel was. And, more often than not, visions and dreams were given to unspiritual communities, to spiritual men to speak to unspiritual communities. And God gave these gifts to Daniel. Now the Babylonians were famous for their wisdom and their supposed insight into the future by supernatural means. But Daniel's insights into the future by supernatural means were far better than anything the Babylonians could provide. The Babylonians' ability was not from God's. Daniel's ability was from God. This is what verse 17 is saying. God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And later on, when Daniel was called to interpret visions and dreams, he acknowledged the fact that what he was able to do was from God. Now the point here is that when we serve in the world, we must be both equipped in the skills of the world in which we live, but also theologically. We will get that theological equipment from the church. Sometimes it might be through a theological school. But the church is meant to be the place where we learn about God, where we learn about how to employ and apply the things we learn about God in our lives, in the societies with which we are rubbing shoulders. We must not be Christian professionals, Christian workers, who are ignorant and foolish, especially when it comes to biblical knowledge and theology. Isn't that often the case? Very well educated Christians. They have high sounding titles behind their names. They are Christians. But very ignorant when it comes to biblical knowledge, when it comes to theology. They care very little about it. They are Christians, which means they are followers of Christ, in whom, according to Colossians 2 and verse 3, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge lie. They follow one who has all the wisdom and knowledge, but they have little, sometimes nothing of that knowledge. They are ignorant of the Bible and ignorant of theology. Maybe this is how we are training our children. We are setting them up to become well-educated people, but who know nothing or little about the Bible and theology. We don't teach it to them in our homes. We don't bring them up to know theology, to know the Bible, to know how to use these instruments in the world. Because to our mind, it doesn't matter that they don't know the Bible and theology. What matters is that they have worldly wisdom. They know how to count. They know how to be accountants and how to be doctors and how to be nurses and how to be teachers, teachers of geography and teachers of computers. That's what matters. That they can have such skills and earn a bit of money and look after themselves. And we don't invest much in their knowledge of God. Because in a sense, so we think, you can survive without that. Can they? We need this knowledge too. In fact, this must be the chief knowledge in order to have a biblical view of our profession, a biblical view of our fields. Those fields may include politics and business, whatever else we might be doing. We need a biblical view of our fields. How do I serve as a doctor, as an accountant, as a teacher, as a lawyer from a biblical perspective? You need a biblical view. In addition to that, we need to have the ability to read our circumstances in God's light, as well as to know the ethical and spiritual demands of our times and circumstances. We need to know. What does God call me to be, or ethically, in my field? What does God call me to be and to do at a time such as this in my country? What are the ethical demands? What are the ethical requirements? How exactly does God expect us to conduct ourselves? We need to know that. And we cannot know that if we don't know our Bibles. If we can't extract theology out of our Bibles, if we have no ability to apply those principles to those circumstances. And Christians compromise when they are in the world because they are ignorant of the Bible and of theology. Why are we so afraid about a Christian going into politics? Because of what we have seen in the past. Christians who go into politics and they compromise. They don't stand up to biblical standards. They don't stand up for the truth. They compromise. And we are afraid for any Christian who chooses to go that way. But we stop to ask the question, why do they compromise? Why do they conduct themselves as if the Bible did not exist? As if the Bible had nothing to say about ethics, about conducting yourself in public office? Why do they live like that? When you study that carefully, you will find that there is biblical knowledge lacking. There is spirituality lacking. There is therefore no stamina, no courage to stand where they are expected to do so. We should therefore, every one of us, labor to not only acquire knowledge about your worldly skill or profession or field, whatever it might be, We should also labor to have a knowledge of God, to have a knowledge of His Word, to extract principles out of His Word to live by in any and every profession. The Bible is not just for the pastoral ministry and for the men's ministry in the church and the women's ministry in the church. And when we leave the precincts of the church and we go back to our professions, whatever they might be, we leave the Bible behind. We leave biblical and spiritual principles behind. No! We learn what we are learning. We learn the Bible. We learn doctrine. We learn theology. So we can now go back into the world and apply the principles in whatever calling we may find ourselves and endeavor to be true to that word there. What I have observed sometimes, even here at LBC, we love knowledge, and it's a good thing. It's wonderful to see people pursuing higher education, working hard to get that degree and that degree. But when we start pursuing that, this is my observation, we stop functioning as Christians. Church attendance goes down. Reading the Bible goes down. Participating in church life goes down because I am pursuing a degree. So what you are saying is, you don't need God when you pursue a degree. You don't need God when you are advancing professionally. You don't need God. You don't need His Word. You don't need to continue learning. Is that what you are saying? That's wrong. That's wrong. How will you go back to that same world and be effective? How? You are setting yourself up to compromise. You are setting yourself up for failure. Because you have ignored the God who has given you that knowledge, which He wants you to go and use there for His glory. Pursue that knowledge, but also pursue God's knowledge. It shouldn't be the one at the expense of the other. Only that balance will prepare you to be a man or woman of God in the context of your own field. Let me hurry on to our third point. And it is that he and his friends, and we are talking about Daniel here, earned a place of eminence in the midst of a pagan world. He earned a place of eminence in the context of a pagan world. Look at verse 19. Then the king interviewed them. He's talking about Daniel, Ananias, Mishael, and Azariah. He interviewed them. And among them all, none was found like these men. Therefore, they served before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. The king interviewed them. This is after they had studied for 3 years, worked hard to understand and know the literature, the culture of Babylon. So they had gotten their degrees, if you like. They have received their learning. And they must now be brought before the king to be examined by him. The examination would have been an oral examination. And after they had gone through that process, none was found like Daniel, Azariah, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They were 10 times better. This is an idiom meant to express superiority over others. It's a way of saying they were superior to everyone. They even surpassed those who had gained their degrees. Superior. Note that they excel in the midst of pressure. They were living in a country not their own. There is the pressure of change. They are being indoctrinated. There is the pressure of brainwashing. But that pressure only seemed to bring the best out of these young men. They didn't become the worse for it. They became better. They excelled. They were 10 times better than their fellows. The pressures were only a part of their training. But note also in the second place that both their worldly skill and their spiritual skills stood them in good stead. They worked hard and did better than others. And all the while, they were dependent on God. They didn't leave God behind them. They didn't leave God out of their business, out of their studies, out of their work. They were faithful and worked hard at both. And so the king approved of them. And verse 19 tells us that they served before the king. Serving before the king was serving in high positions. The closer you are to the king, the better, the higher. That is also true today, isn't it? Those who serve closer to the president, they are more influential, aren't they? They are higher, aren't they? And these young men served before the king. The third thing we must note is that Daniel rendered a very long service. He served the Babylonian Empire, which began with Nebuchadnezzar, and there were quite a number who followed Nebuchadnezzar. The Babylonians were conquered, the Persians came in and replaced them, and Daniel continued to serve right through to the Persian Empire. Because we read in verse 21, thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. And the Babylonian Empire lasted a long time. 70 years at least. And he went in as a teenager. So he probably served for a little over 60 years. And then a little more in Cyrus's court. And he did that apparently in a reasonably high position. So Daniel's approach, courageous, principled, courteous, trusting God, applying his well-earned knowledge, both spiritual and worldly, worked. It ensured his survival as a servant of God in a pagan world for a long time. The lesson is clear, isn't it? As Christians, we are in the world. We are serving in the world. We must not give up our God. We must not give up our Christianity. We can be skilled and competent in our various fields of training while remaining Christians, while remaining devoted to God. And we can excel. We can do better than others. We can serve in high positions. Yes, even positions closer to the presidency. Even the presidency itself. Nothing wrong with having that ambition. If we would influence our society, we must strive to gain the positions that will position us to have that influence. Don't think you are being humble by refusing such positions. Think of yourself as a witness to the truth of God through that position. And when you can't be there, look at what opportunity you are missing. Look at what you could have done and you won't, because you are not in a position to do it. You don't have the instruments of power. You don't have the authority. You don't have any influence. Go for it. To the glory of God. I want to conclude in this way. If we would have a standing in a pagan society, and it doesn't have to be a standing in some high position necessarily, but just a standing, a good standing, an influential standing of sorts. If we would have a standing in a pagan society, we must, first of all, be men of courage. Be men of principle. Men who are ready to stand by the truth of God. And men who are ready to stand by the law of God. And to be uncompromising in our stand. But along with that, to be courteous and respectful. To be likable. To be friendly. Sometimes we manage to be courageous and principled. But unfortunately, we do it in a nasty way. And so we put off the very people we are supposed to be influencing. The very people we are trying to win over. We are nasty about it. So often, we fail to keep the balance. I have failed many times. And I know some of you have. But if we would be influential, if we would do good in the pagan societies in which we live and work and learn, we must combine decisiveness with courtesy and trust God to work on our behalf. Secondly, we must pray for and strive to win the favor and goodwill even of the powers that be. This is not the same as compromise. I repeat, this is not the same as compromise. Daniel could win the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs without compromising. We must try and do that. It's about winning their respect and therefore their support. We may not always win. Sometimes even people who admire our honesty and integrity will not be won over. Our integrity may be the occasion for inviting persecution. I'm aware of that. But the point is, people will still respect you. Even if they are persecuting you, they will respect you. And if you remain consistent, the chances are that you will win them over. You will win their favor. You will win their support. We know of a president in this country who employed a Christian DPP, a Christian Attorney General, a Christian Inspector of Police. And this is a president we didn't think much of previously. But he did that. How did he do it? Somebody must have influenced him. Somebody must have moved him to do the right thing. Perhaps the people he was employing must have impressed him. I don't know. But that is an example of the fact that it can be done. Thirdly, we must excel in worldly skill and in spiritual skill to be effective in the world. It's not enough that you know your skill, your worldly skill well. It's not enough. You must know God just as well. You must know His Word just as well. You must develop the skill of moving from God's Word to doctrine and from doctrine to application in your field, in your life. Proverbs Proverbs 1 verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's the beginning. It's the beginning. You must pay attention to that. As much as you are paying attention to your worldly skills. Fourthly and finally, we must work hard and earn a place of usefulness and even eminence in the midst of a pagan world. We mustn't look down on Christians who are seeking political office. Christians who are seeking to be influential in the public square. We mustn't. We must pray for them. And we must thank God for them. But we must pray that they would display. Indeed, if they would be influential, they must display the character of Daniel, the integrity of Daniel, the fortitude of Daniel, the courage of Daniel. Daniel ended up in a good position, along with his friends. They didn't do it for the sake of position. They did it as a fruit of their faithfulness. Indeed, we must remain fruitful, even if we are under the threat of persecution. We must remain faithful. But our prayer and hope must be that our faithfulness would lead to recognition and position and usefulness. Excel in worldly skill, but also in the knowledge of God and of Christ. God gave you that knowledge. Christ is that knowledge. So you may exercise yourself to His glory and the good of the people you serve. Amen.